What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we're back at Fenway Park, and it's different. It's different. We've got snow on the ground. We do have Doug Lane to our left. Chris Curtis is here.
The Doug Lane who never ages.
He never ages. Another season.
Never changes, never ages. It's good. We all want to be that way.
And you were caught up in the whole magic of Fenway. I saw you taking a nice panoramic view of the scene coming in here today. So do you like it? Do you like Fenway Fest at Fenway Park?
Well, you know, I praise everything Red Sox, and... you cannot overstate what they did here, this ownership group. I mean, I was reared on a trough watching other men just pull it out and pee into a disgusting sink at Fenway Park. And that's what this place was. Anybody who said you could save Fenway Park, to me, it was the 90s version of we could host the Olympics. Like, it's just totally... absolutely insane. Nobody with a functioning brain thought it was possible. And what this place is now and continues to evolve into is remarkable. But yeah, the team and the investment, we'll get into that later, but it is a beautiful day. It's actually oddly warm. It's not, I mean, given what it's been this week, it's feels nice, beautiful day. I love the morning snow. Oh, God, did I miss Pudge this morning. God, those were the best mornings. But beautiful day in Boston.
Well, Fenway Fest will go all day here at the park. And right now, MGM Music Hall is hosting the, well, what used to be the Q&A with owners. That's not really happening. They have the Netflix guy presenting.
Right.
We will talk to one of the owners, Sam Kennedy, president, minority owner.
And they have a dunk take for me at noon.
They do, yeah. You and Sam, we've already chatted with Sam. We're going to play that back for you at about 11:30 today.
Yep.
You guys were pretty civil.
Yeah.
We got into some of the spending.
We got into the build and makeup of the roster. We got into something with Sam that we'll just mention briefly here. We did it in the first show after the passing of Larry Johnson. But
yeah.
Mustard and Johnson, this event was sort of born out of Christmas at Fenway. And Craig Mustard and Larry Johnson were there in a always a contentious conversation with Larry Lucchino. And Sam and I were reminiscing, or maybe, no, Colin with the Red Sox and I were reminiscing about the Patriots making a move during Christmas at Fenway. And Larry demanded no Patriots. So it is our annual rite of passage, and now we can – collectively say, well, the Red Sox, at least they're not the Patriots.
At least they're not the Patriots. We've got coaching search to discuss, but we do have a cavalcade of Red Sox guests today, including the new ace, Garrett Crochet at noon, Craig Breslow, 12:15, David Ortiz late in the noon hour, and also coming up very shortly, Tanner Houck at about 10:30, and I think we're going to play our Alex Cora interview here in just a few minutes.
I'm just pissed I can't talk to my Canadian pitcher about the pitch clock. That's been my
Pivetta,
2 years in a row.
Your guy Pivetta is no longer here.
Yeah.
I saw Jim Bowden gave him an A for the offseason. I mean,
Jim Bowden's pie-eyed.
Yeah, well, I mean, they haven't fit. And I pressed Cora in this interview on a little bit.
Pressed his shirt. That's right. You did that for
him. I thought I put the screws to him about the infield.
Is Lou coming by?
Lou is on with Rob at 1.
Oh, okay.
He has to go over to the MGM Music Hall.
Well, it was great to see Lou. We spoke with him for a bit. Always good to see him. But yeah, it's a they have a nice setup. I just sort of gave it a gander to see if James is coming by later. It's got very family friendly. So if you're in the area looking for something to do today, they actually have the heat on. I don't know how they did it. They like put these heat fans underneath the concourse, so it's not too bad down there.
And James is tapping out today, right? Your son is not going to make it.
He does not. I don't know. He's not into it. Is this normal for 2-year-olds to be like, I don't want to leave the house?
Yeah. Well,
anything. It's just whatever. I regret the fact that I mocked you, Ken, and Maya in the car seat. My new record is 46 minutes.
Oh, I'm telling you, the car seat, you don't understand it until you've gone through
it. But it's the most insane thing. Why don't you want to just get in the seat so we can go home? Why are you sitting in the back seat?
I also I don't want to bring up a negative right away, but your college streak has ended.
Yeah, that was awful.
God,
Well, I give Sarkisian that.
I went big, $35 on your Texas lawnmower.
That is it. I own it. Costas was right. I was wrong. That was the second they got the touchdown, make it 7-7 right before the half. You ever notice in big games, the second there's a touchdown, it seems to be a flurry. Like, you remember right before the half of Super Bowl 49 where Brady hit Gronk on a great touchdown pass to make it 14-7 Patriots?
Yeah.
Seahawks got the ball. They scored, boom, right before halftime. That touchdown, the screen play to Henderson.
The floodgates opened. The dam breaks.
Because you thought, it's Henderson, right? The guy that got the 15-yard on Sportsmanlike.
Yep.
That was the big play because Ohio State was up a touchdown. You think they're going to go down, score again. Boom. They're out. They punt it. Texas gets the ball. They tie it up right before half, and then 70-yard screen pass, and that was over. So bad call by me.
A lot of football going on, but we will talk about the Patriots situation, the coaching search, the week that was, and, of course, the NFL games today, which will be on our air after Rob Bradford. But let's start with Alex Cora. So we just sat down with him. He seemed to be in a good place, seemed to be in a
Looks
good mood.
Great.
He's got pitching help out the wazoo now.
Yep.
Garrett Crochet and Walker Buehler.
And some very interesting details about when he signed the extension,
yes,
how he came to that decision, and the legend of Theo Epstein will grow.
And also, I think it's interesting his take on Liverpool, his trip over there, and how they view the Red Sox.
I don't think people are going to be thrilled with that commentary in this building.
Oh, okay, well, so this is our little chat with the manager, AC, Kenny Curtis Show, live at Fenway Fest from just a bit ago. With the manager, Alex Cora, always the most popular presence at Winter Weekend or Fenway Fest, wherever it is. Is that the same this year now? You've got a long-term contract in tow, or have things changed since last year?
They have changed a little bit, right? But it's kind of like the same feeling. As soon as you get on that plane to come here, it's like we're almost there, right? We're almost going to Fort Myers. Been around the guys. Got to see Garrett for the first time yesterday. Impressive, by the way. We were able to go to a game last night as a group. It's always good to come here. Different, but I think obviously with snow today is kind of like, okay, whatever. But to do it here, we'll see how it goes. You know, I think the fans are going to like it.
So I have to say probably the most shocking development all last year was the announcement of your extension. Mm-hmm. Not because we didn't think you wanted to stay here or that it was a bad idea by the team. It was that it seemed just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I know we've been over it a million times, but what was it, if there was a driving force for why you said, you know, I trust this group, I trust this place, I'm ready to go both feet back into the organization?
Yeah, conversations with the family. Now, at one point, you know, like, Angelica was, like, wondering what's going to happen, you know? Like, she's there for me the whole time, but, you know, people were talking about the West Coast and this and that, and like
that was Ken.
Yeah, it was like, well, you imagine like if we decide to play it out and you know do the free agent stuff, whatever. All of a sudden, we end up in the West Coast. It's a huge move for us, you know. Like we were talking about it. Like if that happens, we have to move to the West Coast, and I play there for 6 years. And
right.
From Caguas to the West Coast is far, you know. So we start having conversations, and then you know, Bress actually he invited me to his house like halfway through the season. You know, like it was an off day, and hey, why don't you stop by my house? You know, we live like 5 blocks from each other, or like a mile from each other, and I'm like, this is fishy, you know, like whatever. So we sat there, and we start talking about the team and this and that. He's like, oh, by the way, you know, like, can we talk about the future? I'm like, you know, we're in a good spot right now. We don't have to do that. So I went home and I told Angelica, and she's like, okay, so what are we going to do? It's like, oh, well, let's play it out, you know. And everything came up fast, you know, like I gave them a window, you know, of if we're going to do something, it's here, you know. And because I felt like we were doing a good thing with the team, and I wanted no distraction. So, you know, we just start talking, and you know, we got to the point that it made sense for both. And I think the winning part too, just watching Abreu play and Zidane play and Hammy, and knowing what the other kids were doing in the minor leagues, it's like, you know what, it's trending in the right direction. And I'm not saying this is Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, Dustin Pedroia, Jacoby Ellsbury, but these kids are talented, and if we can accomplish things around them, we're going to be in a good spot. And I truly believe that this year, you know, with what we have done in the offseason with the pitching part of it and the position players that we have a pretty good chance to get back into October.
When you had that conversation with Craig, was any part of it, let me buy the groceries, give me a little control here, give me a little power?
Company card.
I always said that my job is to be the manager. You know, you give me 26 guys, and I have to do everything possible to maximize the roster. But at the same time, kind of like, you know, hey, man, like, I have a pretty good feeling about the game and where we at. And it's not only, you know, the lineup construction or pitching moves and all that. You know, I'm in tune with everything. Like, I get it. You know, I know that. You know, like last year, you know, Jose Iglesias, right? Like, nobody's talking about him being kind of like the guy that changed the Mets, right? And Iggy is a guy that, little by little, if you see who he was here with the Red Sox in 13, 14, what, 13, right?
Yep.
I mean, slapping the ball the other way, not controlling zone, good defender, and now he's the other way around. He's driving the ball, controlling zone, and stuff like that I pay attention to. You know, like, it's something that it intrigues me. In the offseason, I'm always diving for, like, kind of like, not the guys, you know, or I'm looking for the guy that can help us, you know. Like, it doesn't have to be the $30 million guy, you know. It can be the $2.5 million guy that can come here and contribute. And they know that, you know. Have a great relationship with our analysts, you know. We're always in tune, always kind of like looking what the other teams are doing, you know. For example, the Yankees, they got a bunch of changeups in the bullpen, you know, like Williams and Cruz, you know. It's like, wait, what's going on here? Why they're trying to get all these guys that throw great changeups, and we look at it and okay, this is why, you know. So it's collaboration. That's the way I put it. And you know, he was good with it, so here we are.
And you know, I think Ken said up the top that, you know, always the most popular guy is yourself, and I think you have such a unique vantage point because you were here in 07. You know, Ken always tries to poo-poo your 400 in April when people are and you saw Francona and Theo, right? Who, if you're going to give any Red Sox fan an opportunity to say the gold standard, it would be those two as the manager and GM working in concert, mm-hmm. the way Tito had control of that clubhouse, the way Theo was, you know, a guy that the players trusted, whatever. Is that sort of the goal, that you and Breslow could create your own version of that?
Yeah, and you can accomplish that, win the World Series. That's let's be honest, you know, it's something that they did, you know, in 04, 07, and it was a good relationship. I still remember, and that's something that I was like, wow, they saw it before it happened. We're in Fort Myers. It was Tito, Theo, and myself. They have individual meetings, you know. We have that here. And Theo was like, Alex, this was going to happen. Petey is going to be probably our best hitter at the end of the season. He's our best fastball hitter. But early on, he's going to struggle. You're going to play three times a week. You're going to do your thing. But at one point in the season, he's going to take over. And boom, boom, boom. Mid-May, I start struggling. He start hitting, and the rest was history.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's not the feel. It's kind of like the information that they had. You know, I think at that point we were ahead of the game. You know, the Red Sox were, you know. And, you know, when they say that, I'm like, man. I tried that every spring training. Okay. And not try it, you know. Like Hammy last year, hey, you know, you're going to go to the minor leagues. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. But you come here, you're going to impact the game, you know, running the base or whatever. That's what he did, right? And that relationship was amazing. It was good to see, and that's what we're looking for.
Can you go, like, for instance, you have a complicated infield situation now where you traded for Vaughn. David Hamilton showed you something a little bit last year. Rafaela, you guys spent some money on. You could see from, like, an organizational point of view, maybe they don't want to go out and add to it because you have some young guys coming up. Are you able to get in the mix and say, no, we need this veteran, or we need this presence to come in here, even though you might see this 2 years down the road, I need help now, you know?
We need to get better, and I think Vaughn Grissom is in a good spot right now. I think last year he gets hurt in winter ball. he goes to Trevor's camp. You know, he was a little banged up. He goes to spring training. He gets hurt again. Then he gets sick. You know, he was never the player we envisioned. Now he's at 222, if I'm not mistaken. I saw him yesterday. He looks a lot stronger. They say he's more explosive. We're going to give him a chance. But at the same time, you know, the offseason is not over. And there's a lot of good players out there that, you know, they can help us not only win games, but win championships, you know. And, you know, we're still working. We're still working hard. I think flexibility in the roster is something that we're looking to, you know, like guys with options. That's part of it, you know. And when you start making tough decisions in spring training, you know, at the end, like, oh, this guy was supposed to be the guy, but he's going to Worcester, it means that your roster is really good. And I think last year we made some tough decisions and we were better in the position player side. And this year it's going to be a lot tougher.
So I think, you know, obviously you're not going to weigh in on specific guys. And I think about a guy in Bregman that's one, and not him specifically, but we took for granted the 04, 07, 13, 18, where the team always had guys that did it. That you came in here, when you were here in 07, you know that, you know, Schill or you know, whatever, Pedro, any of those guys. Well, no, Pedro wasn't in 07, but you know what I'm saying. There were guys in that roster that your manager had won, the organization had won in 04.
I mean, and think about it. In 07, it was Josh and Kurt. You know, like that, and that's, I can walk you in the offseason. You know, we have a lot of meetings, you know, with pitchers and all that stuff. And the thing about the playoffs, the thing about winning in October, it's not only one pitcher, right? One guy. You know, it was Pedro and Schill. It was Josh and Schill. You know, in 13, it was Lester, Lackey. Right? And Lackey and Peavy, right?
Right.
In 18, we have five.
Right.
You know, five studs, you know. In 21, if you think about it, you know, it was Nate. It was Eduardo, you know, like. Like now, pitching wise, we're there, you know, with Garrett. You know, I think he, you know, and Walk, you know, Buehler, you know, is kind of like that guy, you know, and that's the pitch. Position player wise, we got better last year. We got better, you know. I think Rafi's injuries put us in a bad spot. I was just talking to Lou about, you know, our offensive struggle, especially late in the season. And if you think about it, the guys that struck out late in the season, they were striking out early, but the guy that really struggled was Rafi. You know, like Rafi, you know, hit like 180 in the second part of the season, you know. And if we can get the big guy going and get the kids going around him, we'll see what happens. But the offseason is not over yet.
Can he play first? I mean, not to get into, like, is it easy for a guy to go over there and play? No, maybe not this year, but down the road, it can be done.
I think the perfect example was Bryce Harper, right? He went from right field to the IL to be a first baseman, right? And he's done it. Vladdy did it, you know. But, you know, like I said a few days ago, and this is all speculation, right? Like, if something happens, you know, and we decide that Rafi is not going to be our third baseman, he'll be the first one to know. And that's something that, you know, we have to do. That's something that I want to do, you know, because if not, I'm going to lose respect, you know, not only with him, but the rest of the industry, because that's how it works.
Yeah.
Just wrap on this, not Red Sox related, but as one of the managers in this town, and we Gerard Mayo just got fired by the Patriots. I'm always, for a while there, it was like Julian, Tito, Doc, and Belichick. And then for the last 5 years, it's been this, you know, nonstop coaching carousel. How hard is that to know that potentially happens, and B, were you surprised that Gerard Mayo was gone after 1 year?
You know what? I actually didn't follow them that much this year. I haven't followed sports a lot. You know, we went to London, we went to Liverpool. We'll be following that team.
Yeah.
You know, they've been really good, but it's just hard. You know,
you get mad when they pay for a guy in Liverpool, like, hey, no, you know,
so it's interesting because I was telling Sam and Mike and John, like, the narrative that we have here is the same narrative over there. Like, we cannot sign Van Dijk or Mo because the Red Sox just traded for Crochet. So here is the other way around. You know, they got three big players that they potentially can transfer, whatever they call it, whatever. So people here is like, oh, we cannot sign this guy because they have to sign Van Dijk, whatever. It doesn't work that way, man. It's not, you know. It's just they're different entities and they have their own thing, you know. But going back to the manager, head coaching stuff, it's tough. It's tough. And there's a lot of stuff that I mean, like the other day, I don't know. I don't know if it's true, whatever. The whole he was playing cards after losing, whatever. Yeah, you know how many times I have played cards with the players after we get swept by somebody or sit there with the guys, you know? Like, it's just hard. People don't know.
That's the worst part, too. Like, I know this was years ago when a guy that you're close with, Francona, he left and there was all this stuff that was written about him. And it's like, I just find that to be the worst practice where people don't put their name to it.
Yeah.
They say it when they know the guy that they're saying it about has no way to retaliate against them.
Yeah.
And they just sully the guy's name. It's like, it didn't work. It doesn't have to be that he was playing cards.
Yeah. I read that one the other day. I was like, man, that's awful. You know, I mean, maybe he wanted to bond with the players, you know, and be there with them. You know, like he was a player. He knows how he feels, whatever. Right. But it's just it's tough. You know, I think Ozzie Guillen said it best, right? When you sign that contract, you just sign in, you know, that you will be fired in the future. Hopefully that doesn't happen to me.
Right.
Well, I know you got to run. You got stuff to do, but we appreciate it every year. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. Not long.
Now. Looking forward to it. And as always, thank you. Happy New Year. Yep. Have a great, you know, great year. And hopefully we can have a great season.
A little bit with Alex Cora here from Fenway Fest. Ken and Curtis on location. And then Bradford to follow us. So a couple interesting things from Cora there. I do think that Liverpool comment is interesting, Curtis. They went over there and they get... And he has observed Liverpool fans bitching about the Fenway Sports Group for not signing their guys, for spending too much or worrying too much about the Red Sox. So that's the price of having the big portfolio, so to speak.
Yes, and I found the conversation about, I mean, I could talk 0407 Red Sox until I die. So I apologize if you're out there, but I think most of the listening audience that's my age would feel the same way. And the conversation that he had with Theo Epstein in the spring of 2007 about Dustin Pedroia, and I've said this before, but my claim to fame as an intern for the diehards with Ryan Rutilio at 1510 The Zone,
mm-hmm.
The Red Sox had their draft. They took Dustin Pedroia in the second round. Dustin Pedroia went to college at Arizona State. Pat Bresnahan from Sherburn, Massachusetts, was the best athlete of our region, was a stud pitcher on Arizona State at that time, on the bus to the College World Series, got Pedroia on the phone, he joined the show. And so from that moment, I had a personal stake because I was like, I got to see if this guy becomes something because maybe I get him on again. And, you know, of course, because of me, he became a MVP and multiple World Series champion. But that April, Alex Cora was hitting 400.
Yeah.
And Pedroia was scuffling. And the fact that Theo knew...
Yep.
That a guy that literally has, I mean, Doug, give me a thumbs up. Has anybody Pedroia's size ever been a great player in baseball? So a guy that literally was one of one, Theo Epstein was that confident to use a second-round pick on him and that he was going to be that kind of a player was pretty cool.
Well, we're going to talk to one of the Red Sox, Tanner Houck, coming up here in just a bit from Fenway Fest, and then we'll have our chat with Sam Kennedy at 11:30. Kenneth Curtis on location. Here is Jake. What's trending? Fenway Park and Fenway Fest. It is the Ken Curtis Show. And we are joined by Sox pitcher Tanner Houck, who is in and enjoying the snow. He was just talking about Curtis getting out there and running the bases a little bit. So
I love it. Yeah, we were talking about Wrigley and experiences. I went to Wrigley a couple times. And I think my issue with Wrigley was that it was given this, like, almost unreachable reputation where I love Wrigleyville. Mm-hmm. The area around the park is awesome. The bars are great. Chicago's just a great city in the summer. Mm-hmm. It's an awesome place.
And Tanner, you grew up in a split household, right? Those Cubs, Cardinals fans.
Growing up 20 minutes outside of St. Louis, like I'm still in Illinois, so like gotta you know have that fan base of Illinois with the Cubs and the White Sox. But you know everyone around me was Cardinals fans, so. We did have a little in-family rivalry with that. My dad was a Cubs fan, like diehard. He's from a little bit further north in Illinois. And then my mom's side of the family, we were all Cardinals fans. So growing up, I had the rivalry, and then going to the Sox, like coming to the Sox, like when I got drafted, I was like pumped because it was like, all right, I still get a great rival. I get probably the biggest rivalry of all of sports, Red Sox-Yankees. Like no matter what, you're always going to play Sunday night baseball, Red Sox-Yankees.
Right. Yeah, I love Wrigley. I love the passion, but it was nice. I'm a Fenway over Wrigley guy. I know, Ken, you go back and forth. But...
What are you, Fenway or Wrigley?
I'm definitely Fenway.
Yeah, okay.
I like the uniqueness of Fenway. I love that baseball is – every stadium's different. Like, I think that's such a unique aspect to our game because, like, you look at football, you look at basketball, like, it's the same court. Like, no matter where you go, like, it's the same distance, but, like, each ballpark has its own little unique, like, touches of, like, you know, obviously Fenway, you got the Green Monster. Like, you look at Wrigley, you got the Ivy with the baskets. Like, each one has its own unique little differences that, like, you go to and, like, you see it and you're like, dang, like, this is really cool. Like, San Francisco, you got the Bay right there. You know, Pittsburgh has the, you know, Roberto Clemente Bridge. Like, there's so many different things that, like, all these ballparks bring in, like, the unique aspect that I personally love as a fan.
Did you follow, speaking of Red Sox-Yankees rivalry, the Soto offseason, and was he going to go to the Yankees? Was he going to come to you guys? And how caught up in all that were you?
I try and stay away from it. You know, this is my time off where I spend it with my wife, and we enjoy our time, and ultimately, I'm just getting in the mindset of working on myself and understanding where I can grow as an individual, as a baseball player, but as an individual off the field. And I take that time to just kind of reflect on that and grow. And so I was keeping up a little bit with it, like texting with some buddies here and there, and they were like, "Is he coming?" I'm like, "I don't know." Like, yeah. I'm like, I don't make that decision. That's above my pay grade.
So when he signs elsewhere, do you call your agent? You're like, well, they have $700 million lying around. Can I get some of that?
You know what? My time's coming. I had a great, you know, first arbitration year with the Sox this year. We both, you know, came to agreement at the end there, and. You know, I just feel blessed to be able to do this each and every day. I've never worked a day in my life because I love what I do. I eat, sleep, and, you know, drink baseball every day. Like, it's what I feel like I was put on this earth to do.
Tanner Houck, our guest. Does that arbitration thing, is that some players get worried about that or worked up over it? Or, I mean, sounds like it was a pretty easy process.
Yeah, I kind of take my life as cool, calm, and collected. Like, look at it from a very simple, like, process, like, listen, like, it's a business at the end of the day. Like, we're all in it, and we're all in it to make money. I get it. Like, it's part of life. But ultimately, I'm not going to stress over it. Like, I just feel blessed to do what I do each and every day.
You're like an alien. I don't think anybody in Boston has that point of view. Great to hear.
It's the Midwest in me. Right. I can't lie.
I love the Midwest. My buddies went out to U of I in Champaign, mm-hmm. So I love that part of the state. Awesome place to go have a good time. But when you look at the off season, and obviously you don't follow it as closely, but does it feel like this year's somewhat different in that the organization's not going to say it's a bridge year. Nobody's going to begin the spring training by saying we don't have a chance. But it feels like this team is a little bit more ready-made for a team that can get into playoff baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited with all the new guys that we brought in. I think the biggest thing for us is another year of experience for all our young guys. I mean, if you look at our roster last year, I mean, how many guys under the age of 27 did we have playing on the field at, like, one time? It was a lot. And a lot of guys that are in that 0 to 3 year range of, like, being in the big leagues where you're trying to figure it out. You're trying to, you know, just understand, like, all the scouting reports and get all the information. And you're just kind of put in those spots. And it's like, all right, like, you're an adult now. Like, figure it out and kind of roll with it. I think, you know, Sedan, Willier, Bayo, you know, Duran, you know, they've had another full year of experience as well as myself. Like, I finally had a full year of experience where I made 30 starts. I reached 170 plus innings. So it's like I've learned what I have to do to grow and be better for this next year.
Yeah, and you could definitely see that. Your efficiency from last year to this year was impressive. Can you take that and help? Like, even Garrett Crochet, who's coming in, is only a one-year starter, right? I'm sure he'll have are there those things you can pass on to other members of your team?
Yeah, I think the great thing is with just, you know, the few names off the top of my head, you know, on the pitching staff this year, you know, you look at Giolito. I know he's coming back from Tommy John, but you know, he's a guy that's throwing 180 innings. Bayo's now throwing 170 innings. Cutter Crawford's throwing 170 innings. I've thrown 170 innings. We bring in Walker Buehler, who is known for being a workhorse whenever, you know, he's healthy and out on the field. I think that you're bringing in a lot of complementary pieces to a lot of young guys that are hungry and have a lot of talent that are growing up in front of everyone's eyes, really.
Yeah.
What did the core extension mean to you personally?
It was great. I love Cora as a manager. I think, you know, he is great in between. You know, he's great with, you know, all of our young Latin guys, and he's also great with, you know, all the
Midwestern dudes,
you know, like he's a jack of all trades. He's an incredible person on and off the field. I think he's one of the best baseball minds around the entire game. The way he sees it is he's playing chess while we're all still playing checkers while we think we're playing chess. Like he's playing 3D chess at that point. So, you know, his mindset to be able to
Ken just learn checkers.
But to find all of that, you know, the small little details and just, you know, be planning for it like he does, it's great to have him back for another 3 years.
He was just telling us he plays cards with the guys. That there was a story about the Patriots coach getting in trouble for, you know, trying to be too much like his players, you know. But it seems like AC is still one of the guys. You know, he can.
I mean, he played 10 plus years in the big leagues. Yeah. Like he is a player's first. He's a player first. Like I'm sure he always will be. And I'm sure if he could, you know, strap up the cleats, he'd be the first one out on the field. Him and Tech would be running out there tomorrow if they could.
How many times, to be honest, does Tech talk about the good old days?
Oh, I love it. I love the old stories. Like I think that's we were actually talking about it pregame. That's the best part about baseball, is hearing all the old stories from, you know, guys that played, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Like, hearing those stories are phenomenal. Like, I loved playing with Rich Hill. I loved playing with Garrett Richards. Like, all these older guys that, like, would just tell stories all day. Like, playing with Chris Sale, like, he would just tell stories of, like, his veterans and, you know, the veterans before him. And, like, they're just such fun, unique things that you get handed down through this game.
Well, I know you got to go, but meeting some of the guys here, like Crochet and Walker Buehler, I guess, is not here, but I'm sure you guys will get a chance to meet soon. How do you guys get together and do stuff to try to get to know one another or bond?
Yeah,
or
Trust Falls. Last night we went to the Celtics game. It was a blast. Getting to go there, hang out with everyone, talk. Just get connected and get that team, you know, bonding started now. It's a great time of year to do it, with spring training starting, pitch and catcher report a month from now. So we're 4 weeks out. Let's get that team chemistry building here, right here, right now.
And you feeling good? Ready?
Feeling great. Feeling ready to go.
Awesome, right. Man.
Thanks, Tanner.
Enjoy.
Thank you for having me.
Tanner Houck of the Red Sox, who joins us here at Fenway Fest, here on the Kenny Curtis Show. Well, there you go. We got a little Red Sox out of the gate here. Thank you, Tanner.
I'm ready to roll. Let's play two. That was I'd never talked to Tanner before.
I know.
Very nice guy.
And he talked about being a Midwest guy and relaxed. You're right about that. You don't see that around here.
Oh my God! But that was a. Have you ever been to Champaign?
I have not.
Oh man, that is a party. I don't know. That's like basically. That's I think where he's from. That's Southern Illinois. But I Wrigley has just never been. Yeah, it doesn't live. I know they've had a bunch of renovations, but when I went, it was like old Milwaukee people getting pie-eyed. You can't even see a replay. Two thumbs down.
Well, the whole Boston sports scene right now is just a bit of a jumble. We had the Bruins
suck.
Well, the Bruins suck.
I mean, I think Greg's going to be right about the Celtics going undefeated.
Well, I mean. That's probably the jinx of all jinx to start the year.
Somehow Wiggy thinks the team that has the best roster with 11 losses somehow has the best coach in the sport, but that's neither here nor there.
One, you get Rich Keefe's report yesterday, and the Marchand response to it was unbelievable, a four-minute...
disarray.
It really was. And, of course, you got the Patriots in their search. I mean, it is, what a tumultuous week in the Boston sports scene.
It used to be, and it really was, the Celtics and Bruins have their own fan bases. But you would agree, more niche than Patriots, Red Sox.
Of course.
In the heyday. And
the ratings prove that, right?
Right. So the Red Sox and the Patriots, for two decades, it was a cold war between the ownership groups where they would publicly be diplomatic, but behind the scenes they're going after the same money, the same investors, the same advertisers, all of it. And it was phenomenal because they drove each other. And since 2018, which I don't think is a coincidence, the last time each team won.
First Brady reference, Jacob, mark it down, 1039.
I was actually going to credit Steph Gilmore. What a pick. That the organizations have mirrored one another in their demise, where you have ownership in flux with diverted attention spans. You have the son of one of the owners who's trying to fight his way in. You have a legendary guy gone, and you have both now seeking an identity.
Quick aside, though, I know we talk too much Brady and Belichick on the show, and people get mad at us for it, but the Brady possible, I guess, alleged, reported...
He's just playing with
wooing of Belichick. I can't get over and I can't process. It's embarrassing for Bill.
Oh, totally.
But it's also embarrassing for Tom. Why?
In no way is it embarrassing. He looks magnanimous. In what way is it embarrassing for Tom? Explain that.
After all the spite and the hate, and he's the reason that you left, now the first guy you want to hire is Bill?
Like, no, it's you're showing, as the leader of that organization, unlike your old team, if the greatest coach in NFL history is interested in an interview, you would welcome into your facility. What's the downside?
Well, no, but I mean, if you read...
No, I'm asking, what's the downside?
The downside is it makes you look bad. You to the
It
to
makes
the modern,
you look bad
yes.
for being interested in a coach that many believe to be the best to ever do it.
But you made it known to the world, this guy mistreated you. This guy wouldn't pay you. This guy wanted to move past you. And yet you want your players
in the
to
four,
experience
in the four,
this?
In the four agreements, you're told to learn, live, and move forward.
Okay. I mean, I didn't mean to get into a fight, but it is sad on both ends.
It's not sad. It's pathetic that Bill Belichick is the coach of North Carolina football.
But it would be more sad
if... The other thing that was so pathetic and so predictable. Everybody that told me that Bill Belichick was thrilled to be the coach of the Tar Heels, this is actually going to be more difficult and more impressive if he wins in college. The second there was the scintilla of hope, the door was made slightly ajar where there a little bit of light popped into the potential of an NFL job. Every Belichick Bobo was like, yeah, he's coming back. I told ya.
I guess. I don't know. He's not leaving, so...
He's cooked. He's not coming back.
It's what a week.
Oh, Greg said good job on the interviews. What a day.
That's impressive, and Doug Lane just said it is just business. So maybe it is a business transaction from Bill and Brady, maybe to just use one or the other to raise the profile of the opening job. Do you think Vrabel is a done deal? A fait accompli?
I do.
Then why has it been announced?
So somebody was telling... I keep getting these, like... people try and give me scoops now, which I don't have any way of vetting, but there's, I guess, some reason that he hasn't agreed that is somewhat behind the scenes, and I don't know what it is. I have no way of understanding
dollars?
It.
Dollars?
There is some element of the negotiation that has gone haywire.
Well, that's not great.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Well, I'm not even being coy. There's something that's gone on that has been a stick in the mud.
Yeah, it rhymes with Elliot Wolf, right?
I just don't understand the Elliot Wolf thing. I
well,
really don't.
It's a lot to unpack. And we'll have time to do so next. So I want to get into a little bit of the Patriots while we have a break. We have a full array of Sox guests today. Bradfo alone is going to have Christian Campbell, Roman Anthony, Tristan Casas, Liam Hendricks. Lou Maloney is going to join him. But we have Ortiz, Breslow, Crochet still to come, and Sam Kennedy. All from Fenway Fest, so don't go anywhere. We're here until 1. All right, Fenway Fest, Kenny Curtis with you until 1 o'clock today, a little bit later than normal. Costos had to get his picks in.
Yeah,
9 o'clock
whiffed for me last night. Not my best.
Not your best. Are you bowing out now for the national title game or the weekend's NFL?
That is a sucktastic game for me. I don't like either.
I know. It's worse and worse. So, back to the Pats now. We got some calls on this, and we'll get to your phone calls here. 617-779-7937. The Patriots... delay in signing Vrabel. You don't think it's a big deal, but there is something.
I mean, I don't know. There's something that went on. I don't know.
Otherwise, they would have announced it Friday or something.
So, I believe the goal is still to announce it Monday. Not announce. Yeah, to do a breaking of the news Monday night. Tuesday, you do the introductory press conference and you celebrate the arrival, and then the NFL gets its divisional and everything down the road. So you're all good. But this past week. I had my lead on this yesterday on the Greg Hill Show, that what an indictment on the organization, what an indictment on the way it is being operated, the Mickey Mouse outfit they have, where you go from having your owner hire Gerard Mayo and then try and tell the media at that press conference that he doesn't see skin color, and then you have something that I was actually one of the good moments of Mayo's presser was that he's like, well, of course it's like I'm a black man, like why wouldn't we know what that is? And you had this past week where Aaron Glenn refuses to interview after you bungle the Rooney rule by bringing in two coaches nobody knew was going to be hired. you try and, you know, stack the deck so you get that out of the way, you get Vrabel in and you announce it. All the while, Elliot Wolf is employed in good stead, where you have the owner talking openly about how he has this brand new grading system. Anybody that could even see the draft board for the last decade should be out of a job. I'm glad Bill Belichick's not doing it. Elliot Wolf shouldn't be doing it. You need to purge that building.
So why won't Kraft come to that realization that he's made a mistake with his personnel?
Paying a lot of people to do nothing. And he doesn't want to admit that Elliot Wolf was wrong.
But he did admit it at the press conference. He said our drafts suck.
Right, but he said we have a new grading system. Right? And who's the one I mean, that's literally like, you know.
And they're blaming
about
Mayo.
Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Right, it's just a mess.
Gerard Mayo's wife on social media calling out the Patriots and those that are leaking it. The organization has fallen to a point that even predates the beginning of Belichick.
Well, don't you think that more than the money is probably what's holding it up then? Vrabel is saying to Kraft, look, I want to come in and clean house.
I mean, we famously had someone on our show that couldn't define it, but Vrabel has all the leverage. And yep. So I'm sure he's doing what any good person in that spot would do, trying to bleed them dry. Well, God bless him.
Maybe Ben Johnson's back in the mix then. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows what happens? But let's go to the phones. Your thoughts on the Pats coaching search, Fenway Fest, of course, and anything else Boston sports here on the weekend with Kenny Curtis. I think Nate in the truck is first up. Let's try to get Nate on. Hello, Nate. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Listen, I think, honestly, you guys have said it too. Vrabel or Ben Johnson, as long as Groh, Wolf, and Fraser are there, it's not going to work. Look at the comments that Wolf actually said about developing the guys that he picked with Mayo. You're going to bring in Vrabel and Johnson, and he has another bad draft. You're going to sit there and let this guy say what he said about development. Listen, the Krafts, as long as they keep doing this patching jobs and stuff like that, it's never going to work. So they're going to have another 3-4 season, like losing season like this past season, to where they're going to have to fire him next season. Just get rid of it all and start anew. Vrabel would be an idiot not, you know, to take this job without having complete control of the GM, OC, DC, all his personnel coming in, because he's not going to have a fair shot. He's just not.
Yeah, you're right, Nate. Good call. I mean, actually, very true. I mean, actually, Vrabel, you'd be impressed with him if he did come in and demand all that to be the case.
And, you know, I look at what they did this week, and I think back to all of the time Robert and Jonathan would lecture the media about how they knew this is how they run all their businesses, and this is just, you know, we always measure 9 times and cut once. Literally, if not for Tom Brady falling into their lap, look at how they run the revolution. Look at the way – this is no longer like a one-off. 2020, 21, 22, 23, 24, 5 seasons. And they have become the laughingstock of the NFL. And it is I don't know why we expect them to do the right thing. So think of all the bad ideas they had that were masked by Tom and Bill.
Yeah, but they had a lot of good ideas. I mean, they had a – you expect them to do the right thing because his instincts as a businessman for 20 years were pretty good.
What were the instincts?
Belichick hire.
That was it. That's a great one. That's
okay.
It.
Letting Bill – take control of the organization,
Do you think that it was a smart idea to get in an argument and a fight with Bill Parcells?
Yes.
Really?
No.
So, I mean, he screwed that up.
Okay. Well, I mean, but by and large, he gave Bill control. It worked for a long time.
But actually, I would say until it stopped working, he just made it worse.
But now they're obsessed on collaboration.
But it sounds like they were all siloed. It sounded like Mayo was against Wolf, who was against them, and who was against the players, and Tyquan Thornton. I mean, did you see those quotes that McKenna got from Wolf before the final game last week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talk about a guy that doesn't live anywhere near reality.
Right, he's passing the buck. Let's go to, I think, Shane is next up on the phones. Hello, Shane. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. How are you?
Okay.
Good. What's on your mind?
So I wanted to say that I think that Alex Van Pelt should stay on as the offensive coordinator.
Well, that's the Curtis take from last week. You were defending AVP.
Yeah, I mean, I don't It's up to Vrabel, so I don't really care.
I don't hate that, I guess. I don't think he was great this year. But
I also think one thing that Courtney and I had a disagreement about it on the Greg Hill Show this week about Drake May. Not a great look to leave without answering questions. It really isn't. I know. I recognize that.
I'm going to give him a pass on this one. I just think he's a young guy who probably just wanted to get out.
What do you think about my theory?
I'm getting out of Dodge.
About Drake May finding out Van Pelt was not a part of the future, telling someone about that, and then leaving.
It could have been.
Because the organization was adamant in correcting that record.
Yeah, so you think it went right to Volan?
I mean, that would be another mistake, but yeah. I guess if you go to Volan, you can never really take ownership of it because people just assume it's a Barstool employee.
All right, 617-779-7937. To come in hour two, our chat with Sam Kennedy and then Garrett Crochet, the new ace. They have called him the new ace too, Crochet. Noon today for the new...
Yeah, I love it. He was a... I think... Giddy would be a way to describe how Cora feels and Sam Kennedy feel about the rotation.
Well, they ran out of pitching last year. They needed help, and they've addressed that. Now, they have other stuff to get to, as Cora said. And even Sam Kennedy did allude to that. So sounds like they're going to add something. I don't know what that is.
I think Bregman is the guy that they're going to add.
That's what Cora wants. I think we know that. All right, we'll be right back.